President Trump be forced from the White House before January 20th. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, the latest from Washington on removing the president from office, either through impeachment or the 25th Amendment. Your questions answered about these processes. Give us a call now, 549-2937. Then later, we'll tell you how a local company is building up the tiny house movement around the Southeast. But first this hour, the latest numbers on the pandemic. Florida has now recorded 1,488,000 cases of the virus. By later today or Wednesday, the state is likely to surpass 1.5 million COVID infections. Hospitalizations and deaths continue to rise around the state. Now, all this just as the first round of vaccinations at two new city-run sites kicked off Monday. The city of Jacksonville delivered close to 1,000 injections to local residents who showed up early and often for vaccinations, both at the Mandarin Senior Center and the Lane Wiley Senior Center. The city provided the shots on a first-come, first-served basis to anyone 65 and older with the birth months January and February. The vaccinations continue today if you're a senior born in March or April. The city is using a birthday system rather than having people go through telephone and online reservation systems to try to simplify things a little bit. And we will continue to cover the vaccination rollout on this program and here at WJCT News as it continues. The other big story of the day, of course, is the impeachment push on Capitol Hill. Today, the House of Representatives is expected to vote on a resolution calling on Vice President Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment, declaring President Trump unfit for office. That is not seen as likely to succeed. Then impeachment measures will move ahead. Lots of questions people have about how this is going to work. Pollster Mike Binder runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab and joins us now with his thoughts on the action in D.C. Hi, Mike. Good morning. Are you there?
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Sounds like someone might be trying to call you. We're already getting lots of calls for Mike Binder as we discuss the Capitol insurrection last week, the move for the 25th Amendment and impeachment. It's 549-2937 to join us. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. Well, Mike, I think the nation is still in shock, really, after last week's events at the Capitol. And today, as we watch the process unspool, there are so many questions about how this is going to work, how the lawmakers will seek accountability for the violent insurrection on the Capitol. Let's talk about the 25th Amendment versus impeachment. This resolution to call for the vice president to invoke the 25th Amendment is largely symbolic, correct?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And the 25th Amendment, just for the listeners that aren't familiar with it, it's an indication that the vice president and members of the cabinet can write to Congress and indicate that the president's unable to fulfill his duties. Therefore, the vice president would then take over. Mike Pence has indicated no compunction to do this. He met with Trump yesterday. The cabinet has really, the folks that seemed most vocally opposed to what happened last week have stepped down. A third of the cabinet secretaries are acting. So I think the 25th Amendment is really a no-go, but in reality, it's probably the fastest and most efficient way if you're concerned about Donald Trump leading this country to get him out.
Yesterday, we spoke with Congressman Al Lawson of North Florida. He was actually not in the Capitol when the attack occurred. He gave his thoughts about the process, saying he supports impeachment and called the president a danger to America for inciting violence, in his words, and encouraging supporters to believe lies about the integrity of the election. Here's Lawson from Monday.
It's embarrassing what they did and the things that they are saying. There's been counts and recounts by Republicans who is in charge of those particular areas. The courts are throwing them out. These individuals, and it's sad for me to say for my colleagues, we're just online with the president, even though it's embarrassing now because the president was really a detriment to the American government and an embarrassment for us all around the world.
Now, Mike, Lawson also called out his North Florida colleague, John Rutherford, Republican of Jacksonville, because he was one of the more than 100 House Republicans who voted to object to the election certification process, even as rioters were storming the Capitol. As the impeachment process moves ahead, what are your thoughts about calls for the congressmen and senators who perpetuated misinformation and falsehoods and lies about the election, increasing calls for them to resign or be held accountable in some way?
Well, don't forget, Rick Scott was one of those senators as well, one of the very few senators that objected. And listen, these folks made political calculations, and I don't believe that any of them actually thought that they were going to change the outcome of the election. I think they were making political statements to a base of support for Donald Trump. And it's also possible that they have legitimate concerns about election security, and that's great. Hey, listen, if we want to investigate and learn and improve, all the power to us. You know, in a lot of ways, Florida in 2020 was a shining star because of what happened in 2000 and the changes we made after that. So I'm all about finding out if we can improve the election process. But the idea that you can go out there and continually propagate these falsehoods that are just absolutely not true, have shown to be not true, have no basis in reality, there needs to be some type of accountability for that. Unfortunately, I don't think any of these folks are going to step down from office. That's really a fantasy at this point.
Businesses are pulling funding for Republicans who supported objecting to the election. That could pose a problem, in particular for Senator Rick Scott, who's leading fundraising efforts on the Republican side. So what about how corporate America is responding to all of this?
Corporate America, but ultimately this is about votes too. Regular America matters. Yes, corporate America and money is important. Don't get me wrong. We can talk to a lot of people that run for office, and the value of those resources is vital. But as long as voters are supportive of folks that were involved in this, they're not going to pay the consequences that maybe others that are opposed to what had happened would wish for.
And that brings me back to discussing impeachment with you, Mike. Certainly the House will move to impeach. The Senate is another matter, of course. Whether there would be enough senators to join with Democrats in the Senate to take the impeachment process all the way to conviction and removal.
Right, and that's the real key, right? We're down to 8 days and a couple of hours until Trump is out of office. You know, say this gets through the House tomorrow evening, you're under a week. Senate isn't even in session. They'd have to do some extraordinary measures just to bring the Senate back into session, which would require Mitch McConnell to act. I think that is unlikely at best. And even if they were to bring them back, there's no way that this would be able to get wrapped up in time to happen prior to Wednesday. If that's the case, and if this drags on into Biden's term, all this is going to do is just zap energy from any initiatives that Biden wanted to get done in the first 100 days. And that's one of the calculuses that I think is a problem for Democrats here. They want to hold Trump accountable. They're concerned about future holdings of office. But at the same time, are you willing to sacrifice any potential legislative agenda that the incoming president might want to enact?
Speaking of the incoming president, he's vowed to take the oath of office publicly at the inauguration at the Capitol, despite security concerns. They obviously, Mike, are going to beef up security significantly for this. We are also hearing that there will be armed protests in all 50 states at state capitals, including here in Florida. And so this insurrectionist movement is filtering down to the state houses. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, it's not a good circumstance for America, period. Listen, protests are fine. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with people gathering to have their voice heard. I'm supportive of those types of things. However, what we saw in Michigan and what we witnessed last week, when you're taking over and you're entering government buildings armed, with the intentions of overturning an election, that's really problematic. And that's, you know, you don't want to say these words and take them lightly, but that's civil war kind of stuff if it comes to that. And that is nothing that anybody in this country wants any part of. Ask somebody that's come from a country that's gone through that. That is not where we want to be. I'm hopeful that what we learned last week, that this is a real serious threat, that people will take this more seriously in the coming days so that next week there's much more preparation. And there is a not only a police force, but the National Guard and potentially military force in place to prevent what we saw last week from happening all over the country.
Let's go to your calls now for UNF pollster Mike Binder. What are your questions about the 25th Amendment and the impeachment proceedings happening this week in Washington in the wake of last week's violent attack on the Capitol building? It's 549-2937. Mark is in Murray Hill. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Good morning. A couple of three things. I'll move quick. First of all, on a sort of related issue, the DSM-5, according to the DSM-5, which is the diagnostic handbook that healthcare professionals use, many of the Trump supporters are schizophrenic. I mean, if you go and you can look online and read the
Mark, that's a huge generalization. Let's be careful about, you know, I don't disagree with you that many Trump supporters have false beliefs about the election. They believe the election was stolen, which isn't true. But that doesn't make mentally ill.
That's not all they believe. They also, many of them believe that Hillary Clinton is rounding up little kids and eating them and turning their skin into shoes. I mean, I'm not making this stuff up.
No, I know. And you're right. In particular, the QAnon movement has fueled quite a bit of this just crazy conspiracy-minded craziness that's taken hold among millions of Americans, Mark. The only reason I push back on what you're saying is to say that doesn't necessarily make people mentally ill, just makes them wrong. They believe things that aren't true because they've been fed a steady diet of lies and propaganda and weaponized disinformation.
Well, I'm not saying this. I'm saying if anyone that wants to look at the DSM-5 and see what the hallmarks of schizophrenia are can look at it. But anyway, just quickly, and I'm sorry I know that's a sort of semi-related issue. What about the chilling effect? And what I mean by that is, if people haven't brought this up, but a few days ago, maybe a few days before the insurrection, Trump made a tweet, and I haven't heard anyone bring this up, but he said, if senators value their own lives, or have a death wish or something, I don't remember the exact verbiage, they will vote to overturn the election when they count the electoral votes or what have you. And this goes to, like, maybe perhaps what's motivating John Rutherford. John Rutherford's not afraid of being attacked by liberals. But as we saw with Lindsey Graham in the airport the other day, it could be that John Rutherford is maintaining the posture he has because he's afraid of these crazies. And there's good reason to be.
Or perhaps he doesn't want to be primaried from the right. That's another factor, Mark. But that's Mark in Murray Hill. I want to thank you for your call. By the way, First Coast News is reporting, Mike, that there is a plane flying over Jacksonville this morning with a banner calling for Congressman Rutherford to resign in the wake of his vote on this. Okay, so Mike Binder, let's talk about QAnon for a minute. And the outlandish beliefs sparked by this conspiracy theory movement that is metastasized across social media. Finally, the social media giants are cracking down on this. But it took this violence at the Capitol for them to take real action. And as the caller pointed out, millions of Americans falsely believe these lies.
Yeah, and one thing to be clear about, Trump got 74 million-ish votes 2 months ago. Not all 74 million of those people are QAnon believers.
Right.
Many of them disdain Donald Trump. They just couldn't vote for a Democrat. But that being said, there are large numbers, as we saw last week, of people that are all in on this. And the QAnon kookiness is just bonkers, right? There is not a cabal of Satan worshipers. They are not eating children. It's just not the case. And for people to actually believe this stuff, it's worrisome. And
it's a if I could jump in, it's a national security issue now.
It is now because they're attempting to bring this out of their basements and into the public square. And by public square, I'm talking about the Capitol building and now state houses. And that is really problematic. And that is domestic terrorism.
Okay. And let's go to David in San Marco. Hi, David. Good morning.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Good morning. Well, I wanted to talk to you and Mike and the audience about the fact that I just finished my fourth book on Donald Trump. This most recent one is titled Trump's 25 Alleged Federal Crimes, the evidence, and why Mike Pence will be the 46th president of the United States. I say this because...
No, he won't. No, that's not true.
Well, let me tell you why.
Maybe for a week at most.
Well, that's true. He will be the acting president long enough to give Trump a pardon.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Trump is facing over 100 years of jail time. We already know that the GAO said that Trump violated the Impoundment Act of 1974. That alone carries, and that's a public nonpartisan government agency, 4 years in jail just for that. Trump is no dummy. We know that. He will protect his interests. He doesn't care about political correctness. He will turn over the presidency, the executive power. He won't call it resignation. He's too proud for that. He'll just say, I'm turning over executive power. I'm going down to Mar-a-Lago to set up the Save America campaign to protect this country. And so Pence, on January 19th or early morning of January 20th, with everything else going on, he will issue a pardon. Unconditional to Donald Trump.
Well, I don't know about that. It wouldn't surprise me if the president tried to pardon himself, or if Vice President Pence refused to issue the pardon to the president. And David, let's also be clear that even if the president is off the hook for federal crimes, he's being pursued by prosecutors in the state of New York, and he cannot pardon himself for state level charges. So
that's absolutely true. And what Trump will do, and Pence will go along with this, Pence will say, just like Gerald Ford said when he pardoned Richard Nixon, I don't agree with the crimes committed, but I'm doing this for the good of the country so that we can focus on addressing the issues that we need to focus on.
Okay.
And
that's
the pandemic, et cetera.
David, I want to thank you for your call. I want to get Mike to react to that. The prospect that either the vice president would pardon President Trump or that President Trump would attempt to pardon himself. Mike, your thoughts.
I think the possibility of Trump attempting to pardon himself is much greater. I don't think that's a given by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's extraordinarily unlikely. Not impossible, but extraordinarily unlikely that Pence will take over prior to next Wednesday. There's no intention of invoking the 25th Amendment. Impeachment won't happen. Trump has repeatedly stated that he has no intention of resigning or holding over power. I just don't see that as happening. I think 46 will be Biden at noon next Wednesday.
Roslyn in St. Augustine. Go ahead, Roslyn.
Yes, I was just wondering, rather than pursuing the 25th Amendment and the impeachment proceedings, would it be possible to just allow the FBI to continue their investigation, allow healing and conversation with the new administration, and reduce the Democrat versus Republican part of it, and just let the FBI bring to justice the person, Donald Trump, who called the people to arms?
Roslyn, thanks for your call. Mike.
And that is a point of view that a lot of folks are having within the Democratic Party that are saying, listen, we need to take Joe Biden at his word during the campaign, and we need to dial down the rhetoric, and we also need to think about moving on with his agenda. The problem is there's a lot of Democrats in Congress, Nancy Pelosi at the front of the list, who believes they have an obligation to impart justice based on what happened last week. And they feel that, you know, politics be damned, this is the right thing to do. There needs to be consequences for the action. And that's why a lot of those folks are moving ahead with the plans for impeachment.
We're getting tweets echoing that. Mike, here's one from Roger. The lies, the eventual insurrection, and the deaths should not be swept under the rug. The results lay at the president's feet, and he needs to be removed. Some in Congress are complicit. How can the accused judge? America is at a crossroads. Stop the lies. Another tweet, I'm more interested in what steps could be taken to remove the senators and representatives who joined the president in inciting last week's violence. What process exists to expel bad actors? And how would that play out? Well, as you pointed out, Mike, they're not going to remove themselves. So,
yeah, these people are not going to quit. And it would take a real movement within the parties to not seat that many sitting congressmen and women and senators.
And here's another tweet from Susie. There's a third way. The 14th Amendment, Section 3, which states that any person who has gone to war against the Union or given aid and comfort to the nation's enemies, they are prohibited from running for federal or state office. Now we're getting deep into the weeds of the Constitution, Mike, but there are some constitutional scholars out there, I guess, on Twitter that are looking all of this up. I don't see that
right.
as likely, but what do you think?
Well, I think that's the really the foundation underlying a lot of what's going on in impeachment here. If that's included as part of the rationale for impeachment, it would bar him from future office, him being Trump, of course. The thing with impeachment that people don't always understand is, yes, the House impeaches you. That doesn't mean you leave office. The Senate has to convict. And if the Senate convicts, yes, you're leaving office, but they can then go the extra step and indicate that you can't hold future office. That's not a guarantee, even if you are convicted of impeachment. It's part of the, you know, essentially the sentencing phase. Yes, you're out, but do you get the forever ban on holding office? And the real easy answer to all of this is don't reelect him. There is going to be elections in 4 years. Simply don't vote for him. That's the real answer for him not getting back into office. I think the impeachment process is too fraught with partisanship to be effective in the circumstances.
Lots of calls, meanwhile, for UNF's Mike Binder about impeachment proceedings. Angie in Ponte Vedra. Hello, Angie.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you for this great show. I had a question because, I am now being labeled as a George W. Republican, who, by the way, votes for people like Obama.
So you voted for both sides then?
Absolutely. But I also voted for Perot, so I don't know. But
so three, you've gone three ways. Okay, go ahead, Angie.
I loved his PowerPoint. What could I say? But the thing about it is that, you know, when Ted Cruz was talking about that, about this Tea Party and the concept behind it, when I was in Texas, to me, it was scary. And The Economist wrote a couple of articles way back when on the Tea Party rhetoric. So I just wanted to listen to your opinion, you and your guest. Thank you.
You mean getting to the roots of what the extremists that we saw. Okay, Mike, as someone who I know has studied this, the roots are to all of this are complex. The Tea Party movement is part of it, but it's not all of it.
Right, and ironically, the Tea Party movement really was based on fiscal conservatism. You know, small government, restrained budgeting, not running huge deficits, which is completely contrary to Trumpisms and everything that he's been doing. You know, Trump's version of the Republican Party is much more populist-based. It's much, bigger government in certain respects and in certain aspects are something that he's okay with. If you think about the tariffs and things of that nature, which are contrary to the underlying ideology of the Tea Party movement, although there's obviously some crossover there. But no, listen, extremism in all forms is bad. And I don't want people, your listeners in particular, to think that this all is hunky-dory on the left. There are some extreme groups on the left that I think are going to be real problematic in the coming years. Once the unified enemy of Donald Trump is out of the way, be wary. The left will turn on itself. And this is something to keep an eye on that I don't know that Democrats are really ready for.
Yeah, let me ask you as a follow-up about that before we let you go. Here's an email from a listener, and we've gotten a few of these folks who say they're horrified by what happened at the Capitol, but they draw a parallel between what happened at the Capitol and some of the protests that we saw in America over the summer. For example, one listener writes, what about taking over entire neighborhoods for weeks or a month, such as we saw in Portland and Seattle? That really put off and frightened millions of Americans, although I don't think it's really on the same level as trying to storm one of the nation's most important government buildings and attack scores of congressmen. So when you talk about the left and extremist movements on the left, is that what you're referring to?
Well, it's not just that, but it's part of that. And I think, listen, people that are drawing comparisons, I think it's fair in certain respects in that the majority of folks that were there on Capitol Hill were not looking to overtake the government. Yes, some were. Absolutely, I'm not denying that. But a large many of them were not. And much like what happened over the summertime, you know, the overwhelming vast majority of those BLM protests were peaceful. Some of them got out of hand, absolutely. And guess what? A lot of those people were arrested and are spending time in jail. I think folks are missing the point here. The fact that the president of the United States was encouraging behavior to attempt to not just pervert, but potentially interrupt and change the course of elections that have been certified by all 50 states, that is a big difference that cannot be overlooked.
And so we watch the proceedings today and tomorrow. We will be actually off the air tomorrow morning as we'll take national coverage of the impeachment hearings on Capitol Hill. But as always, Mike, always so good to get your insights. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
He's Mike Binder. He runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Laboratory. Well, much more still ahead on the show later. Why you need to take the stairs tomorrow. It's National Take the Stairs Day. But up next,
a movement to really only buy and pay for what you need. And we started to see the average size of a home shrink.
We'll tell you how a Jacksonville-based company is fueling the tiny house movement across the Southeast. That's next. Welcome back. Well, the Jacksonville company Simple Life is building houses across the Southeast right now. But here's what makes them different. They're tiny. Simple Life CEO Mike McCann says the tiny house trend is taking off for all manner of reasons. I spoke with him about it. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. Good to talk to you.
Oh, same here. I'm glad to be part of your broadcast.
Now, your company is headquartered in Jacksonville, although you do building in Central Florida, other parts of Florida. But what you're doing is creating and operating tiny home communities throughout the Southeast. This is fascinating because this whole movement has really taken off in America and I think around the world. What is the appeal of a tiny home?
Well, good question, Melissa. We found that back in 2010-12, as we were coming out of the downturn, there was a movement to really really only buy and pay for what you need and what you use. And we started to see the average size of a home shrink, as at the same time we saw home costs rising at a very rapid rate. So affordability became a big challenge, especially for the focus of our target audience, which is really the active baby boomer.
Interesting. So active baby boomers, that's your market. And why do they want a tiny home? What about these homes that you're building really appeals to them?
Well, there's a couple things that play into it. One is we're seeing a lot more single household formations through death or divorce of our target market. We're seeing a lot less hosting of the grandchildren and extended family, but more of a desire to be active and travel and really reduce your footprint to what it is you need to live comfortably, and also to connect with a sense of community, as well as welcoming the outdoors, hence our focus on the Southeast.
And you've been building these homes in Florida, North Carolina, 1 and 2 bedroom cottages. And when we talk about a tiny home, how tiny are these homes? How small are they?
Great question. Tiny home, by the national definition, is anything 1,100 square feet or less. And our homes range in size from 400 square feet to 1,100 square feet, from a one bedroom with a loft to a two bedroom, two bath with a den.
So you can really go as small as like a studio apartment size home if you want to. But yeah. How do you live in a home like this? I mean, you really do have to pare down your possessions. That's one thing. Live with
Absolutely.
Less.
Absolutely. And that's our motto. Live, you know, large, but live with less. Part of it is the amenity package that we bring to the table in each community, as well as the land and the communities themselves. So we focus in high traffic markets where baby boomers are already flocking and there's already infrastructure and amenities that are attracting them there, whether it's walking trails, outdoor space, restaurants, entertainment. We want to go where they're already showing up, if you will. And then we look for a special piece of land. We like water. We like trees, tree hammocks. All of our communities, we commit 40% plus to green space. And we create, you know, social environments, whether it's a yoga room, workout room, common area where people can gather for coffee or wine or other activities. We do a lot of programming, so we pull people out of their homes and connect into the community through a number of different venues, social as well as responsible. We have garden clubs, we have tool shed envoys that, you know, manage the tool shed for people that need a screwdriver or a hammer or something that they've left behind because of their smaller home space, but that we make room for, you know, in the community. But also within the unit, the home, it's about smart planning, smart space planning. So there's not a nook or cranny that we don't, our designers don't find to store, whether it's, you know, things that you're not using every day and or, you know, seasonal items and or everyday items that are cleverly stored in closets and under staircases.
Yeah.
And,
And, you know, you often think of, as people get older, accumulating a lot of clutter in their lives and a lot of stuff, but not everyone is like that. Just to give one example, my parents are trying as hard as they can to get rid of stuff. They want less stuff. They want less clutter. They want to pare down. I think you've tapped into that desire. And it's interesting, too, to note that even throughout the pandemic, the demand for this type of housing has not slowed down. Is that right?
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, you know, Florida in general is seeing a significant movement from the Northeast due to the pandemic. I mean, that movement was already in place with people wanting to leave the cold winters, high cost of housing and taxes, congestion, but now couple that with the pandemic and, you know, the opportunity in Florida to live outdoors year-round, has certainly made a big difference in Florida in general, Florida real estate in general.
Now, you're based here in Jacksonville, Mike, but your company is expanding throughout Florida. You're looking at some new communities. Will there be any in our area? Where are you planning to build?
So, good question. I have to go back to what our discipline is. Is we want to go where the baby boomers are already, you know, migrating. And so we very, very excited about choosing the Villages for our first Florida community. We're just a mile outside of the Villages here in Florida, the Morse Family Project that is just a baby boomer paradise. And we've chosen a great site that is on water. It has Lake Andrew. Our second site, which we're going through final permitting on over the next few months, will be down in Punta Gorda. Mm. Again, another very popular area for, you know, our active adult lifestyle. Not 55 and over. We certainly attract, you know, 40-somethings and even some 30-somethings that are really behind the movement. And we've got a couple other markets in Florida. St. Augustine is a market that interests us tremendously, again, for the same reason. You know, in St. Augustine, you've got St. John's County has got some pretty substantial hurdles for a developer to meet, and our, from a cost standpoint, with school impacts and infrastructure impacts. So that's a longer-term project, but a conversation that continues with county officials because they're very attracted to our affordability component of our...
These homes are about $100,000, is that right?
We range, you know, from 100 to 170. You know, we have people that come in. We have, you know, couples that come in and they add everything that we offer. We offer a she shed and a man cave, by example, which is a 12 by 12 separate building, air conditioned, that they can use for arts and crafts and office. We have somebody in North Carolina that uses it as her studio. She's an acupuncturist. So you can, we've seen people spend as upwards of $200,000, but our average price point's in the 130 to 150 range.
Well, the website is simple-life.com, a Jacksonville company capitalizing on the tiny house craze. Mike McCann of Simple Life, thanks so much for joining us. We'll watch your progress.
Thank you, Melissa.
All right. Are you tired of all the real life horrors that are happening across America and the world? How about reading a book? This month's First Coast Connect Book Club selection is timely. It's Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. Our facilitator, Stacy Goldring, is on the line now to tell us why she chose it for the month. Hey, Stacy, good morning. Hey, Stacy, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. And so, Frankenstein, interesting choice for this time we're living through. Why Frankenstein? Why is that your book of the month?
I think it's the book of 2020, darling. But
okay.
This book was selected as part of a series that I'm doing with Cindy Edelman, with the Comer. The title of the series is called Literature, and we explore how art and the written word reflect who we are, what we have in common, etc. So we've selected Frankenstein because during these past few months, I've really retreated to the classics. That's where I found solace. And that's where I find meaning in greater context. And this book, published first in 1818 and then again 20 plus years later, really is a cautionary tale. Melissa, the full title of the book is Frankenstein, the Modern Prometheus.
Mm-hmm.
And Prometheus is the Greek tale that is a cautionary tale about blind ambition. And I think we can learn a lot from Frankenstein. You got to set the movie aside. Forget that for a moment. And it's worth rereading. And clearly, Frankenstein is becoming part of our popular culture. Again, I don't know if you have Netflix, but The Frankenstein Chronicles was a series that I just recently finished binging. And they take a look at Frankenstein through, it's really directed well. And they riff on the story. You know, they had their own expression through film of exploring what happens when we follow ambition and we decide not to listen.
And don't think about the consequences of what we're doing.
Correct. And then if you turn your back on what you created and don't take responsibility for it, and that is a major part of the book. It's beautifully written. It's written by a woman, Mary Shelley.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting because it was written as part of a contest. She, her husband, I don't know if they were married at the time, and Lord Byron, some other people, they were kind of stuck in a castle in Switzerland, you know, a tough place to be during some really awful weather. And so instead of, you know, what we would do would say, let's just watch The Crown again. they decided to have a writing contest and who could write the best horror story.
And she won.
And that's how she won. And that's how Frankenstein was born. It is also something that I found very interesting in my research, and I'll talk about more at the Comer on February 24th virtually. Some people think that the name of the monster is Frankenstein. It is not. The monster is never named. Sometimes things are so ugly, language loses the ability to label it. And Frankenstein is the name of the creator of the monster, and his first name is Victor. And don't you just love books where you have a clue about the character's personality based on the names that are chosen? So we have Victor Frankenstein as our main, our antagonist in this case. It's really beautifully written. And I, this is, I don't know, my third time reading this book. The first time I read it, I didn't know there were two editions. The second time I read the edition published in 1832. You know how I am with numbers. This one was printed in 1818. So you may ask, well, why publish it twice? Well, Mary was left a widow, and she needed to make money. So she decided to republish it and give the people what they want.
Interesting.
So the second time around, it's a little bit gorier, a little bit darker, but
okay.
The lesson is the same.
Well, if you could, tell folks again how they can zoom on to the event you're having at the Comer as part of your series on literature. Not literature, but literature.
Sure. Right, literature. So the best way, I think, is how we always do things, Melissa, just have them shoot an email to our email here at the station, or they can reach out directly to the Comer, or they can reach out directly to me on Facebook at Chapter Endnotes, Stacy Goldring at Chapter Endnotes, and we'll get them there any way we can. They can contact the museum. We're just putting all the pieces and parts together for this now, so the timing couldn't be better, because it gives you time to read this book and the next book after that. If people are interested in keeping up with the books, will be A Woman in White by Wilkie Collins, followed by Middlemarch by George Eliot.
Email Stacy at bookclub@wjct.org. It's our monthly book club discussion. Always good to hear your voice. Thanks so much for being with us.
Of course, too. Uh-huh.
All right. A quick break. And in a moment, we'll tell you why you should take the stairs tomorrow. It's National Take the Stairs Day. That's after this. It's First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9. We'll be right back.
Inspired by America's wide-open terrain, Dvorak's New World Symphony is known as one of the most popular in the repertoire. Gonzalo Farias makes his Jacksonville Symphony Masterworks debut on January 22nd and 23rd, leading the orchestra's presentation of the work the New York Herald said is a noble composition of heroic proportions that produced a hymn and an anthem to what American music can be. Visit jacksymphony.org for tickets.
Parenting and working right now, it's kind of a no-win situation. There was no way that I could keep this up and still be a good mom. There was no way that I could keep this up and still be a good employee.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, one single mother trying to make it all work until it just couldn't. We'll have that story for you next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6 here on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Marco Werman. America did not invent democracy, but protecting it is an American tradition, and now it's under threat.
People have to think about this not as a one-off episode, but what we've seen is a slow-rolling attempt to keep himself in power, and we don't know where this is going to head yet.
America's transition crisis as it's seen inside and outside the U.S. on the world.
Today at 3 on WJCT News 89.9.
Investigations are underway into what's been described as an epic law enforcement failure, and not just into poor policing around the Capitol, but whether rioters were given help by the police.
If they don't learn from this mistake about getting behind political candidates, then I don't know what it's going to take.
I'm Jen White. That story and the latest on the moves to remove the president from office, next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, tomorrow is National Take the Stairs Day, and the American Lung Association is challenging everybody in town to adopt healthy habits in the new year by taking the stairs whenever you can. Cindy Springer is Development Manager for the Lung Association chapter here in Jacksonville. Hey, Cindy, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
So it's National Take the Stairs Day Wednesday, and you just are trying to remind everybody that this is an easy way to get healthier and support your association. Tell us about tomorrow.
Yeah, so tomorrow is National Take the Stairs Day. It falls on January 13th every year. And we really just want to promote taking the stairs for health and fitness. I don't think a lot of people realize, but stair climbing burns 2 to 3 times more calories than any other exercise. And it's really especially good for your heart and lungs. And I think we all know that this year it is more important than ever to promote lung health.
Right. When you take the stairs, you get more empathy for what it's like for anyone with lung disease. You might be gasping for air. And you know what? In this pandemic, it also is a reminder of people dealing with COVID-19 as well.
Yeah, absolutely. While we're taking the stairs, we get that kind of temporary burning feeling in our lungs where we're really trying to catch our breath. And while it might be temporary for some of us, that's really how a lot of people who are living with lung disease feel every day. So it really is kind of a reality check that there's people that are living like this every day, feeling that way every day. And there really is something that we should do about it.
Here are some statistics from the Lung Association. In Florida, more than 2.5 million people live with lung diseases. Lung cancer is the number one cancer killer in the state of Florida. And you've also launched a new initiative. It's the COVID-19 Action Initiative through the Lung Association. How is that working?
We're actually really excited about that. So yeah, our COVID-19 Action Initiative is something that we launched back in April, and it's our $25 million investment to address the COVID-19 pandemic and protect against future respiratory virus pandemics. So through this initiative so far, we've funded 12 research projects, given away thousands of masks through our Buy Two, Give Two Mask campaign. We're hosting some educational town hall events. We've developed a COVID-19 vaccine tracker. So we've been really busy.
So you even have a helpline, 1-800-LUNG-USA, for anyone who has questions about COVID and the impact on their lung health, because that can be a lasting impact, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, there's so many questions about COVID-19, and we want to be a resource. You know, we are the American Lung Association, and so we have that lung helpline, and our experts are there to really answer any questions you might have. So, we really encourage people to reach out to us at that lung helpline if they have any questions.
Okay. With all of that said, tomorrow is National Take the Stairs Day. So if you're in a building with stairs and you have the choice between that and an elevator, take the stairs. Let's also go ahead a little bit on the calendar, Cindy, to the Jacksonville Fight for Air Climb. That's coming up March 27th, and for the first time, you're doing it outdoors at TIAA Bankfield. Tell us what's on the agenda.
Yeah, we're really excited about that. So the Fight for Air Climb is our signature event. It's typically held in the stairwells of the Bank of America Tower, But because of everything going on with COVID-19, we kind of had to reimagine our climb. And we're really excited to take it outdoors at TIAA Bank Field. So we're going to be climbing not all of the stairs of the stadium, but some of the stairs in the stadium. So we're really excited to be outdoors and still be able to see all of our participants and our supporters.
That sounds like a lot of fun. People can register for the Fight for Air Climb right now. You need to go to the website climbjacks.org, climbjacks.org. That's coming up in March at TIAA Bank Field. There is a registration fee. It will go toward all of the Lung Association's efforts to end lung cancer, lung disease, and also support their COVID-19 action initiative. So take the stairs tomorrow. Really, take the stairs every day. You know, and register at climbjacks.org for the Fight for Air Climb. Because of the pandemic, they're doing it outside this year. Hopefully it'll be a beautiful day for it. Cindy, thank you so much. She's Cindy Springer, Development Manager for the Lung Association here in Jacksonville. Yep. Thanks so much, Cindy.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
You too. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. And thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep those emails coming. We value your feedback. It's always to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. A quick programming note, we will be off the air tomorrow due to NPR coverage Wednesday morning of the impeachment proceedings in the House of Representatives. And back Thursday. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. Have a great day, everyone. We'll see you soon.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.